Chapter 3. A Victim is Named. Bailey was back in the safety of enclosure. Daniil's face wavered before his eyes, and it was splotched with dark spots that turned to red when he blinked. Bailey said,
"What happened?"
"I regret," said Daniil, "that you have suffered from harm despite my presence. The direct rays of the sun are damaging to the human eye, but I believe that the damage from the short exposure you suffered will not be permanent. When you looked up, I was forced to pull you down and you lost consciousness."
Bailey grimaced. That left the question open as to whether he had fainted out of overexcitement, or fright, or had been knocked unconscious. He felt his jaw and head and found no pain. He forbore asking the question direct. In a way, he didn't want to know. He said,
"It wasn't so bad."
"From your reactions, partner Elijah, I should judge you had found it unpleasant."
"Not at all," said Bailey stubbornly. The splotches before his eyes were fading, and they weren't tearing so.
"I'm only sorry I saw so little. We were moving too fast. Did we pass a robot?"
"We passed a number of them. We are traveling across the Kinbald Estate, which is given over to fruit orchards."
"I'll have to try again," said Bailey.
"You must not, in my presence," said Daniil. "Meanwhile, I have done as you requested."
"As I requested?"
"You will remember, partner Elijah, that before you ordered the driver to lower the top of the car, you had ordered me to ask the driver how close in miles we were to destination. We are 10 miles away now, and shall be there in some 6 minutes."
Bailey felt the impulse to ask Daniil if he were angry at having been outwitted, if only to see that perfect face become imperfect. But he repressed it. Of course, Daniil would simply answer no, without rancor or annoyance. He would sit there as calm and as grave as ever, unperturbed and imperturbable. Bailey said quietly,
"Just the same, Daniil, I'll have to get used to it, you know."
The robot regarded his human partner.
"To what is it that you refer?"
"Jehoshaphat, to the outdoors. It's all this planet is made of."
"There will be no necessity for facing the outdoors," said Daniil.
Then, as though that disposed of the subject, he said,
"We are slowing down, partner Elijah. I believe we have arrived. It will be necessary to wait now for the connection of another air tube leading to the dwelling that will serve as our base of operations."
"An air tube is unnecessary, Daniil. If I am to be working outdoors, there is no point in delaying the indoctrination."
"There will be no reason for you to work outdoors, partner Elijah."
The robot started to say more, but Bailey waved him quiet with a peremptory motion of the hand. At the moment, he was not in the mood for Daniil's careful consolations, for soothings, for assurances that all would be well and that he would be taken care of. What he really wanted was an inner knowledge that he could take care of himself and fulfill his assignment. The sight and feel of the open had been hard to take. It might be that when the time came he would lack the hardihood to dare face it again, at the cost of his self-respect and, conceivably, of Earth's safety. All over a small matter of emptiness. His face grew grim even at the glancing touch of that thought. He would face air, sun, and empty space yet. Elijah Bailey felt like an inhabitant of one of the smaller cities, say Helsinki, visiting New York and counting the levels in awe. He had thought of a dwelling as something like an apartment unit, but this was nothing like it at all. He passed from room to room endlessly. Panoramic windows were shrouded closely, allowing no hint of disturbing day to enter. Lights came to life noiselessly from hidden sources as they stepped into a room and died again as quietly when they left.
"So many rooms," said Bailey with wonder. "So many. It's like a very tiny city, Daniil."
"It would seem so, partner Elijah.
said Daniil with equanimity. It seemed strange to the Earthman. Why was it necessary to crowd so many spacers together with him in close quarters? He said, "How many will be living here with me?" Daniil said, "There will be myself, of course, and a number of robots." Bailey thought, he ought to have said a number of other robots. Again, he found it obvious that Daniil had the intention of playing the man thoroughly, even for no other audience than Bailey, who knew the truth so well. And then that thought popped into nothing under the force of a second, more urgent one. He cried, "Robots! How many humans?"
"None, Partner Elijah."
They had just stepped into a room, crowded from floor to ceiling with book films. Three fixed viewers with large 24-inch viewing panels set vertically were in three corners of the room. The fourth contained an animation screen. Bailey looked about in annoyance. He said, "Did they kick everyone out just to leave me rattling around alone in this mausoleum?"
"It is meant only for you.
A dwelling such as this for one person is customary on Solaria."
"Everyone lives like this?"
"Everyone."
"What do they need all the rooms for?"
"It is customary to devote a single room to a single purpose. This is the library. There is also a music room, a gymnasium, a kitchen, a bakery, a dining room, a machine shop, various robot repair and testing rooms, two bedrooms."
"Stop! How do you know all this?"
"It is part of the information pattern," said Daniil smoothly, "made available to me before I left Aurora."
"Jehoshaphat! Who takes care of all of this?"
He swung his arm in a wide arc.
"There are a number of household robots. They have been assigned to you and will see to it that you are comfortable."
"I don't need all this," said Bailey.
He had the urge to sit down and refuse to budge. He wanted to see no more rooms.
"We can remain in one room if you so desire, Partner Elijah. That was visualized as a possibility from the start. Nevertheless, Solarian customs being what they are, it was considered wiser to allow this house to be built."
"Built?" Bailey stared. "Wait, you mean this was built for me? All this? Specially?"
"A thoroughly roboticized economy."
"Yes, I see what you're going to say. What will they do with the house when all this is over?"
"I believe they will tear it down."
Bailey's lips clamped together.
"Of course, tear it down. Build a tremendous structure for the special use of one Earthman, and then tear down everything he touched. Sterilize the soil the house stood on, fumigate the air he breathed. The spacers might seem strong, but they too had their foolish fears."
Daniil seemed to read his thoughts, or to interpret his expression at any rate. He said,
"It may appear to you, Partner Elijah, that it is to escape contagion that they will destroy the house. If such are your thoughts, I suggest that you refrain from making yourself uncomfortable over the matter. The fear of disease on the part of spacers is by no means so extreme. It is just that the effort involved in building the house is, to them, very little, nor does the waste involved in tearing it down once more seem great to them. And by the law, Partner Elijah, this place cannot be allowed to remain standing. It is on the estate of Hannes Gruer, and there can only be one legal dwelling place on any estate, that of the owner. This house was built by special dispensation for a specific purpose. It is meant to house us for a specific length of time, till our mission is completed."
"And who is Hannes Gruer?" asked Bailey.
"The head of Solarian security. We are to see him on arrival."
"Are we? Jehoshaphat, Daniil, when do I begin to learn anything at all about anything? I'm working in a vacuum and I don't like it. I might as well go back to Earth. I might as well..."
He felt himself working up into resentment and cut himself short. Daniil never wavered. He merely waited his chance to speak. He said,
"I regret the fact that you are annoyed. My general knowledge of Solaria does seem to be greater than yours. My knowledge of the murder case itself is as limited as is your own. It is Agent Gruer who will tell us what we must know. The Solarian government has arranged this."
Well, then let's get to this Gruer. How long a trip will it be?
Bailey winced at the thought of more travel, and the familiar constriction in his chest was making itself felt again. Daniil said,
No travel is necessary, Partner Elijah. Agent Gruer will be waiting for us in the conversation room.
A room for conversation, too, huh?
Bailey murmured wryly. Then, in a louder voice,
Waiting for us now?
I believe so.
Well, then let's get to him, Daniil.
Hannes Gruer was bald, and that without qualification. There was not even a fringe of hair at the sides of his skull. It was completely naked. Bailey swallowed and tried, out of politeness, to keep his eyes off that skull, but couldn't. On Earth, there was the continuous acceptance of spacers at the spacers' own evaluation. The spacers were the unquestioned lords of the galaxy. They were tall, bronze of skin and hair, handsome, large, cool, aristocratic. In short, they were all R. Daniil Oliva was, but with the fact of humanity in addition. And the spacers who were sent to Earth often did look like that, perhaps were deliberately chosen for that reason. But here was a spacer who might have been an Earthman for all his appearance. He was bald, and his nose was misshapen, too. Not much, to be sure, but on a spacer even a slight asymmetry was noteworthy. Bailey said,
Good afternoon, sir. I am sorry if we kept you waiting.
No harm in politeness. He would have to work with these people. He had the momentary urge to step across the expanse of room, how ridiculously large, and offer his hand in greeting. It was an urge easy to fight off. A spacer certainly would not welcome such a greeting. A hand covered with earthly germs. Gruer sat gravely, as far away from Bailey as he could get, his hands resting within long sleeves, and probably there were filters in his nostrils, although Bailey couldn't see them. It even seemed to him that Gruer cast a disapproving look at Daniil, as though to say, You're a queer spacer, standing that close to an Earthman. That would mean Gruer simply did not know the truth. Then Bailey noticed suddenly that Daniil was standing at some distance at that, farther than he usually did. Of course. Too close, and Gruer might find the proximity unbelievable. Daniil was intent on being accepted as human. Gruer spoke in a pleasant, friendly voice, but his eyes tended to remain furtively on Daniil, looking away, then drifting back. He said,
I haven't been waiting long. Welcome to Solaria, gentlemen. Are you comfortable?
Yes, sir, quite, said Bailey.
He wondered if etiquette would require that Daniil, as the spacer, should speak for the two, but rejected that possibility resentfully. Jehoshaphat, it was he himself who had been requested for the investigation, and Daniil had been added afterward. Under the circumstances, Bailey felt he would not play the secondary to a genuine spacer. It was out of the question when a robot was involved, even such a robot as Daniil. But Daniil made no attempt to take precedence over Bailey, nor did Gruer seem surprised or displeased at that. Instead, he turned his attention at once to Bailey, to the exclusion of Daniil. Gruer said,
You have been told nothing, plainclothesman Bailey, about the crime for which your services have been solicited. I imagine you are quite curious about that.
He shook his arms so that the sleeves fell backward and clasped his hands loosely in his lap.
Won't you gentlemen sit down?
They did so, and Bailey said,
We are curious.
He noted that Gruer's hands were not protected by gloves. Gruer went on,
That was on purpose, plainclothesman. We wanted you to arrive here prepared to tackle the problem with a fresh mind. We wanted no preconceived notions. You will have available to you shortly a full report of the details of the crime and of the investigations we have been able to conduct. I am afraid, plainclothesman, that you will find our investigations ridiculously incomplete from the standpoint of your own experience. We have no police force on Solaria.
None at all? Asked Bailey.
Gruer smiled and shrugged.
No crime, you see. Our population is tiny and widely scattered. There is no occasion for crime, therefore no occasion for police.
I see. But for all that, you do have crime now.
True. But the first crime of violence in 2 centuries of history.
Unfortunate, then, that you must begin with murder.
Unfortunate, yes. More unfortunately still, the victim was a man we could scarcely afford to lose. A most inappropriate victim. And the circumstances of the murder were particularly brutal.
Bailey said, I suppose the murderer is completely unknown.
Why else would the crime be worth the importation of an earthly detective?
Grewer looked particularly uneasy. He glanced sideways at Daniil, who sat motionless, an absorptive, quiet mechanism.
Bailey knew that Daniil would, at any time in the future, be able to reproduce any conversation he heard of whatever length. He was a recording machine that walked and talked like a man.
Did Grewer know that?
His look at Daniil had certainly something of the furtive about it.
Grewer said, No, I cannot say the murderer is completely unknown. In fact, there is only one person that can possibly have done the deed.
Are you sure you don't mean only one person who is likely to have done the deed?
Bailey distrusted overstatement and had no liking for the armchair deducer who discovered certainty rather than probability in the workings of logic.
But Grewer shook his bald head.
No, only one possible person. Anyone else is impossible. Completely impossible.
Completely?
I assure you.
Then you have no problem.
On the contrary, we do have a problem. That one person couldn't have done it either.
Bailey said calmly,
Then no one did it.
Yet the deed was done. Rykane Delmar is dead.
Well, that's something, thought Bailey. Jehoshaphat, I've got something. I've got the victim's name.
He brought out his notebook and solemnly made note of it, partly out of a wry desire to indicate that he had scraped up, at last, a nubbin of fact, and partly to avoid making it too obvious that he sat by the side of a recording machine who needed no notes. He said,
How is the victim's name spelled?
Grewer spelled it.
His profession, sir?
Fetologist.
Bailey spelled that as it sounded and let it go. He said,
Now, who would be able to give me a personal account of the circumstances surrounding the murder, as first-hand as possible?
Grewer's smile was grim, and his eyes shifted to Daniil again, and then away.
His wife, plainclothesman.
His wife?
Yes. Her name is Gladiah.
Grewer pronounced it in 3 syllables, accenting the second.
Any children?
Bailey's eyes were fixed on his notebook.
When no answer came, he looked up.
Any children?
But Grewer's mouth had pursed up as though he had tasted something sour. He looked sick. Finally, he said,
I would scarcely know.
Bailey said,
What?
Grewer added hastily,
In any case, I think you had better postpone actual operations till tomorrow. I know you've had a hard trip, Mr. Bailey, and that you are tired and probably hungry.
Bailey, about to deny it, realized suddenly that the thought of food had an uncommon attraction for him at the moment. He said,
Will you join us at our meal?
He didn't think Grewer would, being a spacer, yet he had been brought to the point of saying Mr. Bailey rather than plainclothesman Bailey, which was something. As expected, Grewer said,
A business engagement makes that impossible. I will have to leave. I am sorry.
Bailey rose. The polite thing would be to accompany Grewer to the door. In the first place, however, he wasn't at all anxious to approach the door and the unprotected open, and in the second, he wasn't sure where the door was. He remained standing in uncertainty. Grewer smiled and nodded. He said,
I will see you again. Your robots will know the combination if you wish to talk to me.
And he was gone. Bailey exclaimed sharply. Grewer and the chair he was sitting on were simply not there. The wall behind Grewer, the floor under his feet changed with explosive suddenness. Daniil said calmly, "He was not there in the flesh at any time. It was a tridimensional image. It seemed to me you would know. You have such things on Earth."
"Not like this," muttered Bailey.
A tridimensional image on Earth was encased in a cubic force field that glittered against the background. The image itself had a tiny flicker. On Earth, there was no mistaking image for reality. Here. No wonder Gruer had worn no gloves. He needed no nose filters, for that matter. Daniil said, "Would you care to eat now, partner Elijah?" Dinner was an unexpected ordeal. Robots appeared. One set the table. One brought in the food.
"How many are there in the house, Daniil?" Bailey asked.
"About 50, partner Elijah."
"Will they stay here while we eat?"
One had backed into a corner, his glossy, glowing-eyed face turned toward Bailey.
"It is the usual practice," said Daniil, "for one to do so in case its service is called upon. If you do not wish that, you have only to order it to leave."
Bailey shrugged.
"Let it stay."
Under normal conditions, Bailey might have found the food delicious. Now he ate mechanically. He noted abstractedly that Daniil ate also with a kind of unimpassioned deficiency. Later on, of course, he would empty the fluorocarbon sack within him into which the eaten food was now being stored. Meanwhile, Daniil maintained his masquerade.
"Is it night outside?" asked Bailey.
"It is," replied Daniil.
Bailey stared somberly at the bed. It was too large. The whole bedroom was too large. There were no blankets to burrow under, only sheets. They would make a poor enclosure. Everything was difficult. He had already gone through the unnerving experience of showering in a stall that actually adjoined the bedroom. It was the height of luxury in a way, yet on the other hand, it seemed an unsanitary arrangement. He said abruptly, "How is the light put out?" The headboard of the bed gleamed with a soft light. Perhaps that was to facilitate book viewing before sleeping, but Bailey was in no mood for that.
"It will be taken care of once you're in bed, if you compose yourself for sleep."
"The robots watch, do they?"
"It is their job."
"Jehoshaphat, what do these Solarians do for themselves?" Bailey muttered. "I wonder now why a robot didn't scrub my back in the shower."
With no trace of humor, Daniil said,
"One would have, had you required it. As for the Solarians, they do what they choose. No robot performs his duty if ordered not to, except, of course, where the performance is necessary to the well-being of the human."
"Well, good night, Daniil."
"I will be in another bedroom, partner Elijah. If at any time during the night you need anything..."
"I know. The robots will come."
"There is a contact patch on the side table. You have only to touch it. I will come too."
Sleep eluded Bailey. He kept picturing the house he was in, balanced precariously at the outer skin of the world, with emptiness waiting just outside like a monster. On Earth, his apartment, his snug, comfortable, crowded apartment, sat nestled beneath many others. There were dozens of levels and thousands of people between himself and the rim of Earth. Even on Earth, he tried to tell himself, there were people on the topmost level. They would be immediately adjacent to the outside.
Sure, but that's what made those apartments low rent.
Then he thought of Jesse, 1,000 light years away. He wanted terribly to get out of bed right now, dress and walk to her. His thoughts grew mistier. If there were only a tunnel, a nice, safe tunnel burrowing its way through safe, solid rock and metal from Solaria to Earth, he would walk and walk and walk. He would walk back to Earth, back to Jesse, back to comfort and security.
security.
Bailey's eyes opened. His arms grew rigid, and he rose up on his elbow, scarcely aware that he was doing so. Security. This man, Hannes Gruer, was head of Salarian security. So Daniil had said. What did security mean? If it meant the same as it meant on Earth, and surely it must, this man Gruer was responsible for the protection of Salaria against invasion from without and subversion from within. Why was he interested in a murder case? Was it because there were no police on Salaria, and the Department of Security would come the closest to knowing what to do about a murder? Gruer had seemed at ease with Bailey, yet there had been those furtive glances again and again in the direction of Daniil. Did Gruer suspect the motives of Daniil? Bailey himself had been ordered to keep his eyes open, and Daniil might very likely have received similar instructions. It would be natural for Gruer to suspect that espionage was possible. His job made it necessary for him to suspect that in any case where it was conceivable. And he would not fear Bailey overmuch, an Earthman, representative of the least formidable world in the galaxy. But Daniil was a native of Aurora, the oldest and largest and strongest of the outer worlds. That would be different. Gruer, as Bailey now remembered, had not addressed one word to Daniil. For that matter, why should Daniil pretend so thoroughly to be a man? The earlier explanation that Bailey had posed for himself, that it was a vainglorious game on the part of Daniil's Auroran designers, seemed trivial. It seemed obvious now that the masquerade was something more serious. A man could be expected to receive diplomatic immunity, a certain courtesy and gentleness of treatment. A robot could not. But then why did not Aurora send a real man in the first place? Why gamble so desperately on a fake? The answer suggested itself instantly to Bailey. A real man of Aurora, a real spacer, would not care to associate too closely or for too long a time with an Earthman. But if all this were true, why should Salaria find a single murder so important that it must allow an Earthman and an Auroran to come to their planet? Bailey felt trapped. He was trapped on Salaria by the necessities of his assignment. He was trapped by Earth's danger, trapped in an environment he could scarcely endure, trapped by a responsibility he could not shirk. And, to add to all this, he was trapped somehow in the midst of a spacer conflict, the nature of which he did not understand.